a really quick and exciting announcement to make. The Menopause and Cancer Podcast is now also on YouTube, and I'm so excited that more people now get to watch our conversations. So the link to the YouTube channel is in our show notes. Please go and subscribe to the channel so that more people who need to hear our conversations are able to find them. Thank you. Welcome to the Menopause and Cancer Podcast, where we speak with cancer patients, survivors, and amazing experts in their fields to help us find solutions to our symptoms and ideas to improve our health. My name is Dani Binnington. Welcome to today's episode. We want to be discussing the number one best tip in how you can strengthen and look after your pelvic floor and pelvic health. And contrary to popular belief and what I've actually said, it's not about just strengthening exercises. I am delighted to welcome Sarah Marsh onto the podcast today, who's going to share her magical tip with you of what she thinks the absolute best exercise is that you can do to support your pelvic health. I think you'll be very much surprised at what she says, actually. In the last few months, many of our conversations were about adding vaginal moisturizers, lubricants, maybe thinking about vaginal estrogens. And I really think we need to extend and open that conversation and also talk about pelvic health. Sarah has been a women's health physiotherapist all her life. She knows so much about how to help and support people with a history of cancer. It's what she does every single day. And I'm really delighted to talk to her. I'll also talk about a recent experience of mine going to the GP for my smear test, how embarrassed I felt at getting two things wrong. And it's a funny thing, isn't it, talking about our pelvic floor, vaginal health, vulval health. And I really had to turn 40 plus to find out more about our bits and about so many things. So this conversation is learning for me, but also I hope it's going to be really helpful and a good resource for all of you, whether you're a patient or a healthcare professional. Let's welcome Sarah into this conversation. Sarah, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
So in the last few months, we have focused much on the use of vaginal moisturizers, vaginal estrogens, and how we can help women, especially when they've been thrust into menopause after cancer. But there is more to it than using these topical solutions, isn't there, to our pelvic health? Tell us a little bit about what you do and why we're having this conversation today.
Brilliant. No, certainly. As anyone who knows me, it's a real passionate area of mine. So I think as women, we kind of disregard our pelvic floor. Some have babies, some don't, and then we don't really talk about it. And yet our pelvic floor, like every other part of us, will change as we go through life. So what I do is I'm very fortunate. Some of my work is at Genesis Care, where all of our patients have cancer. So we offer a progressive exercise program that's safe for them. But so often what comes up as part of that are barriers to exercise around pelvic floor. So as we age, there are changes to our pelvic floor. Certain cancer diagnoses cause other issues to that. But essentially what I offer and what pelvic floor physios do is that we help women and some men, but we help women really optimize the function of their pelvic floor. Our pelvic floor is so influenced by stress, by changes to hormones, by so many things. So if as we age, unfortunately, we have some muscle changes and then perhaps we have a cancer diagnosis, so we are already in a little bit of a holding pattern. So as a physio, my role is to really understand the medical history, to understand how these women feel about their pelvic floor, how it's working now. Some of what I do can and will quite often involve internal examination. I always recheck, all of my colleagues will be keep rechecking that women are happy to go ahead with that. And that's useful because I think culturally what we don't do is people come along to me and they say, you know, do you think my pelvic floor or my vaginal area is normal? And I'll say, I don't know. I've never met it before. And as women, what would be great is if we actually connected a bit more because things will change, but we don't know what it looked like before. So, or what it felt like before. But an internal exam is usually incredibly gentle. But that can tell me about whether somebody can contract and release. And we become a little bit obsessed, I think, about strength of the pelvic floor muscles, so often it's about whether we are using the full range. So whether, yes, we are contracting and lifting, but also that we are fully releasing. And that can be so important. And of course, when we're stressed and things, we don't necessarily release.
And I want to talk a lot more about this because, you know, I'm a really passionate yoga teacher, and in yoga we have bandhas and we're holding a lot, but I'm not always sure whether I can fully relax as well. Anyway, I'm going to talk to you about all of that because I'm very, very curious. What I wanted to say when you said women say, that's my pelvic floor and maybe my vagina, my vulva look normal. It's a really, really important question for all of us to address and just sort of mull over, because I had to get into my 40s and I used to host a program, or I still do, with Jemima from Crextalk for young people affected by cancer. And as we're going through lockdown, a TV program came out and it was called Sex Education. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's absolutely wonderful. One of my teenage daughters wanted to really watch it, so I watched it with her. And there is this one girl and she starts to bake cupcakes with vulvas on top. So wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But the whole conversation was about how different all of our vulvas look. And I had a real moment of awakening thinking, gosh, I'd never really known, I'd never really seen. I wasn't ever someone who watched a lot of porn. And then if I did, a lot of the vulvas looked the same. And so also I had to go and become a 40-year-old woman, recognizing that I knew very little about the physiology of what vulvas can look like and the massive differences, of course. But it was a real sort of awakening for me, thinking, gosh, Dani, you don't know very much about yourself or others. And it was a real sort of wake-up moment. And I wonder if people at home listening, whether they think, well, do my bits look normal, or is my pelvic floor normal, or what would Sarah say?
Completely, but that's absolutely true, isn't it? And I would be part of that category before I moved into pelvic floor. You know, I think culturally, men know exactly what their penis looks like, and they see it every day, and they're sure that they check it out every day. It's still working, whoopee. But we don't do that in the same way. And, you know, it's so important. So if one of the things I try and persuade my kids to do as well, I mean, I must be great. Kids come around and I'm like, have you asked your friends to check them? But, you know, it's like, just put it somewhere safe, but use a mirror or take a picture once every 6 months, once every year when you're younger, but just so that you have some track record of what was your normal, because there's so, again, within normal, there are so many. That's such a big spectrum, but then you might know if things aren't quite right.
Okay, just time for a really quick message, please. And I want to thank our partner, Empowder, for sponsoring this episode and helping us create amazing content and getting that out to you. When I approached Empowder and I said, look, I think you're herbal supplements and whole food supplements are amazing. And I know many of the women in our community really like them, but I'm also worried about some of the ingredients. They were amazing and said, look, Dani, yes, some of the ingredients are going to be contraindicated for a small group of women in your community, especially when they are on certain medication like tamoxifen. And it was just amazing. They created a whole resource for us, which we got out to so many healthcare professionals as well. And also many of you emailed us and said, oh my gosh, thank you for doing all of the legwork. We know that if you're consistent with taking a supplement, that you make sure that the ingredients in that supplement are okay. Like I know Rebecca from Empowder has done so much work in putting together really good quality supplements and products for everyone, that there can be really big benefits. Of course, there can be benefits. Otherwise, we wouldn't have to worry about possible contraindications, right? These things work. They have an impact and an effect on our body. Now, if you've done your research, if you want to support yourself, not just now, but also for your overall or future health, check out Empowder. I love their gut instinct product, and it really helps me personally with bloating, but really get to back to sort of the basics. What are your top three symptoms? Have a look at the ingredients in any of these supplements and really make an informed decision for you if this is right for you and if you're ready to maybe give it a go. Check out their website. It's mpowder.store. That's mpowder.store. And just do your research and And I really just want to empower you that you have loads and loads of options too. And whatever they are, whether they're acupuncture, whether they're hormone replacement therapy, whether they're herbal supplements, or whether they're a combination of everything, I want us to know that we have lots of options too. Thank you, M-Powder, for shedding a little bit of light onto something that can be very confusing. And so what problems do people present with? Because you also work for Penny Brown, which is a beautiful charity. And so you'll have so many patients coming through the door who've been affected by cancer, whether they know that their cancer treatment has put them into menopause or not, because we know many people don't actually know. What problems do they present with when they come and see you?
So they're presenting a lot with many of the common menopause symptoms, but which also happen to be medication related symptoms very often. So, you know, the changes in hot flashes, general aches and pains, which is why appropriate exercise is just so fabulous. They will come along with skin changes, itching, soreness, more dryness than they had before. I think, if I'm honest, quite a lot of the patients that we see in clinic at that stage, when Penny Brown and Genesis and I are working with them, it's usually during treatment or within sort of 2 to 3 months afterwards. I'm not sure how many of them at that point are actually thinking about sex, but if they have changes such as a feeling of downward pressure, which we know a prolapse feeling, it's not always prolapse, but we know the feeling of downward pressure in the vaginal vulva area is very common in women, whether they've had children or not, as is changes to urinary frequency, irritation in that area, more frequent urinary tract infections. So those tend to be the kind of changes that we see. You know, not every woman gets, I hope they don't, I hope nobody ever gets all of those symptoms. But I think what happens then is it becomes such a barrier to finding their new you, their new, past their treatment. I think it becomes a barrier to their exercise, to their confidence, to their mental health, because it's something else on top of the treatment that they've had. And that's why it's so important that we can address that and work out what's happening. One of the things I do is when I have access to an ultrasound machine, I can look at the breath and the pelvic floor movement externally using ultrasound, just scanning down through the bladder and then the transverse abdominals and the pelvic floor muscles. So it can be so non-invasive. And I loved your comments about yoga. So I'm a yoga teacher too, although I don't do so much now. And I just been able to incorporate the breath to optimize the movement of the pelvic floor and also help sort of bring down our stress response can be part of the battle and maybe all we need to do from a pelvic floor perspective.
So for anyone thinking where exactly that pelvic floor is, so we have our vagina and our vulva, and I think over the last few years we've been really good at differentiating that the vagina is on the inside, the vulva is on the outside.
Yes.
Where exactly is the pelvic floor?
So that forms part of it, and either side of the vulva, if you're looking externally, you'll have a small area, which sometimes is referred to as the saddle area, and it goes across to the inside of the legs, if you like. So it's a very small area. It goes from the rectum to through the vulva forward to that little pubic symphysis bone, which is that little bony part that we have at the front of our pelvis. And that is called the pelvic bowl. So this is important because as well as sexual function and as well as urinary function, it also has a postural function and it keeps our organs in. And this is good. Yes, we want our organs to stay in. But they link so closely to other muscles. So our adductor muscles and our inner thighs go into a muscle called the levator ani muscle, which go directly into the pelvic floor. So this is why if we're not functioning optimally and we're feeling stressed and perhaps we're gripping and we're not getting that full movement, it can start to cause other issues. And all of that can be fixed. That's what's so, you know, we can make such a difference just by helping people understand. And we aren't taught this. We aren't taught this in our sex education at school. We certainly weren't.
No, but I thought a really strong pelvic floor is what everyone is after. When you, maybe I'm not differentiating enough, but when you sort of hear Kegel exercises, pelvic floor exercises, isn't it all about strengthening and tightening and holding in and squeezing and squeezing? No, tell me, I'm wrong. Okay.
No, you're not wrong. And we do, of course, we want strength. And we want our pelvic floor muscles to be able to do little quick squeezes. And we want them to be able to lift and hold and then release. The challenge is a little bit, so our pelvic floor muscles don't move very fast. So if I was saying this, that's probably more movement than we actually get in our pelvic floor muscles. They are tiny. But unlike something, if you think like an arm muscle or bending your knee, if you see people, so if my arm is straight and then I fully bend, that's the full range of my bicep. If we pretend this is my pelvic floor just for a second, what happens with changes in sudden symptoms, stress, all of these things, is that instead of using the full range, we tend to just use this range.
So we're not fully
releasing. So my philosophy always is to start with, if we're not fully releasing, let's work on getting a full release and then strengthening through the full range. That's what I really want to help people with now. People won't fully release if they're not feeling safe. So if somebody has any concerns about incontinence or leaking or anything else, they're not going to do that in a gym or on the tube. So, you know, it's then about asking them where their safe place is so they can sit or lie and do it there and work with that. And that's when I also use the breath to know that our anatomy and our breath help move our pelvic floor.
So these are exercises, like you would exercise your legs, your thighs, your biceps for your pelvic floor. I guess you go through the basics with people of vaginal estrogens or moisturizers and all of that anyway, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people are tuned into that and perhaps haven't got the desired I'm all fine effect. And then it might be really worth for someone to think, is it to do with my pelvic floor and do I need to put a little bit of work and effort into that? So talk me through that relaxed pelvic floor. So, you know, I'm someone in my 40s growing up, and as a young woman, it was very much about holding your belly in. Me and my friends, when we were at school, it was all about like every picture, hold your belly in, like madness, isn't it? But when you hold your belly in and you press your belly button towards your spine, that contracts your pelvic floor in a lot of cases.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I think maybe a lot of us have, you know, into that generation of sort of tightening a little bit too much. Where is the pelvic floor? What does it need to be when it's relaxed? Like, what's optimal?
Okay, so obviously everybody is different. I'm gonna have to...
Yeah.
So I think if we think about, I love what you've just said about that. So my mum always used to say to me, oh, no, breathe in, Sarah, we'll get through. So breathing in implied, just like sucking in, that I was making myself smaller. You know, breathe in, then we can get through. When we take a breath in, and that's why I tend to use the word inhale, because it just implies, when I inhale, I'm bringing air into my lungs. So my lungs have to expand like a balloon. What that does is do a gentle push down, even at rest a little bit here, when we're not heavy, you know, not taking huge breaths, that pushes down my respiratory diaphragm at the bottom of my lungs. And it also pushes down my pelvic floor a little bit. So on an inhale, things move down a little. It's also true that our belly might come out a little bit, our ribs expand, and that's a softening of release. Then when we exhale, just as you were saying, if we exhale, then the pelvic floor draws up, the air and the CO2 comes out of my lungs. If we think about that as opposed to suck in or breathe in, as my mum used to say. So that's what I'm talking about. So for a lot of people, it might be, outside of any other exercise, just when you've got a moment, lie down, probably, you know, knees bent, just to soften everything, and take some normal breaths and then take some deeper breaths. And I want you just to visualize no strong lifting or anything, but when you're inhaling, everything's releasing. And then when you're exhaling, you're bringing it back up. So not even contracting. And then we can add some lift and hold. And of course, we want people to do these movements in sitting and standing, because as women, we don't generally get that much time to just lie down and do nothing. So it needs to be functional. But I mean, it's why on a person, I think yoga is so well suited to helping women with pelvic floor, just to optimize function. Because if we're not starting with a good movement, we're just strengthening at the top of the range or a small part of the range. And that means when we need more range, so if we want to go back to more exercise, or just perhaps we're doing something more strenuous, we don't have the full capacity. And the other thing I love to link with that, of course, is that taking a slightly longer, deeper breath can bring in our parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah.
So it's just bringing in that stress response. And anyone who's stressed is going to hold. If you speak to anybody and they say, well, I am a little bit nervous about leaking, then that's not a relaxed pelvic floor. So that's why I do it somewhere safe. And then the idea is that you get overlay, you get used to it, so you have more confidence when you are out and about a little bit more.
Yeah. And when you speak about stress, of course, a cancer diagnosis brings a lot of stress with it. We also know that being pushed into menopause, even if someone transitions into perimenopause, naturally anxiety increases. So the anxiety on top of your decreasing hormone levels, on top of a cancer diagnosis, on top of all the stress you've been going through, is going to, we're holding our body differently and our pelvic floor is also affected by that. So is it a matter of starting to learn to trust and release as much as learning to hold and squeeze?
I think so. I really do. And I think not just the pelvic floor, but that whole area of our body. And if we can, you know, if someone says to you, oh, just relax, never has anybody said, yes, I'll relax if someone tells you to. So we have to learn to persuade our bodies to do that and not force it. And sometimes that first part is just to reconnect. There's no right or wrong, just reconnect with our pelvic floor, reconnect with our breath, and then we get some of that release. And then we, of course, we can work, and definitely with patients, I will work on strengthening. If I perform an internal exam and I'm asking someone to lift and squeeze and there's not much happening, of course I need to work on strengthening. But I do want to balance it with being able to fully release and get optimal movement to help manage and just sort of balance some of that stress response and the anxiety that we get at that time in our lives.
Yeah. Let's talk about a few patient scenarios. So I know just by the division of how it goes, you'll have lots of breast cancer patients that come to you who might have been on hormone replacement therapy before. Yeah. They have been undergoing treatment for breast cancer and they have to come off their hormone replacement therapy, which is a grief for many women and a real sadness and a real trauma for many women, actually, just that sort of transition. And then they're told they can't go back on their hormone replacement therapy and people don't give them any other options. People are feeling really bereft. But then you also have gynecological cancer patients that might have had radiotherapy, surgery to the cervix, maybe vagina, vulva. Talk me through a few of those, because those are really invasive treatments.
And again, everybody is different, but it will be a different challenge, because with radiotherapy particularly, there's going to be so many tissue changes to the area. So I'm very lucky where I work. As part of their treatment pathway, we would talk to them about, you know, dilators and maintaining that space within the vagina. We also have rectal cancer patients. And again, that can start to have a bearing on the back of the vagina wall just because where treatment goes. I think we often underestimate how long radiotherapy symptoms and side effects continue. It's almost like I've done my radiotherapy, fatigue might peak after 2 to 3 weeks, but the rest of those symptoms, the changing to the tissues, can carry on for such a long time. So we need to work with them. I have quite often worked with these patients and used ultrasound externally because it's so non-invasive. And the benefit is they get biofeedback, so they can see what's happening. And a lot of those patients, you're going to have some holding, aren't you? Because that area is irritated, painful, tight, skin changes. So that's where just giving them some exercises just to release and get things moving without trying to lift anything at all, really, at that point, can be really, really helpful just to help. And then to reconnect back, because I think you mentioned that word trust. I think trust and safety are such important words.
Yeah. I mean, when you have had anything done, an invasive sort of procedure done to you anywhere, it does feel invasive, doesn't it? It's uninvited. We haven't chosen to be in this situation. We have to get through it. Of course, we will accept the treatments that are there and are saving our lives, but it does feel like a little invasion, and to some extent more. And then we have to build up that trust with ourselves, but also for our partners. Our partners don't want to hurt us. They don't know how to necessarily touch us. Communication is different or difficult in the best case scenario. And then to sort of talk about all of those things that are to do with our vaginas, vulvas, pelvic health, it's a big ask, having to try and figure it all out ourselves. And I think many women don't even know a pelvic floor physiotherapist, a women's health physio, actually exists. And
and that's sad as well, isn't it? You know, there aren't enough of us. I now work predominantly privately. I do some pro bono with that, but it's really hard. So we have, you know, it's the problem with the service provision is that
very often your GP should be able to refer to pelvic health physio. Currently, okay. as we know, so often there's going to be a wait list. Yeah. I think if you are still under the care of a consultant, it's possibly as helpful to go to the consultant and ask them to refer you, you know, send yeah. a letter to your GP on their behalf. I think on your behalf, I think sometimes that can just push a little bit further on that basis. I just think it can be really, really helpful. That said, you know, when I see patients privately, we aren't seeing patients every week. You know, I don't see, it's not quite the same as perhaps musculoskeletal physio, where I might see you for a knee injury or a hamstring injury every week. It's much more about seeing somebody, taking time, because you need to build trust with your physiotherapist as well. If you're going to be intimate, you can't just go, right, okay, I would just like to give you an internal exam. You have to build trust. And because I believe the connection with our pelvic floor and breath is so much broader, but I would see somebody once and I might not see them again for another 3 or 4 weeks. You know, it doesn't have to be that you're seeing somebody every week, because in order to see change and to feel different, then I need my lovely women to go away and practice and actually give the body time to have some physiological changes. So quite often I might do some catch-ups with email in the middle and then see them. So I think if people are feeling it's restrictive, and I do think it's really sad that this provision isn't available as consistently across yeah. our country, but it isn't. And we have to just, right now, we have to accept, I think, where we are. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're signing up to see a physiotherapist on a weekly basis for 6 months. It really shouldn't be like that.
Okay. And so people go away with a little plan, some exercises. It's like doing any other sort of program, I suppose. And
yes,
when you...
Yeah.
Is it? Or yes? Is that what?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Yeah. Really. And of course, it's up to compliance of the individual, which it always is.
Which is the hard thing, isn't it? Sticking yeah, to anything. Course. But the people who really stick to it, that want to give it a real go, what improvements can you see and in what sort of period of time?
So I think, just like physiologically, if you're doing exercise, it takes 2 to 3 months to see changes. And it takes, depending on who we are and what's going on, it takes, I think, a good, we don't quite know, everyone's different, but, you know, 6 to 12 weeks to see a new habit, to make something part of what we do.
Okay.
You shouldn't need necessarily to be doing your pelvic floor exercises every day once you've seen some improvement. I encourage patients to incorporate them into other things that they do anyway. But I think a little bit of diligence, 4 to 5 times a week, a couple of times a day, is helpful to get people used to it. But it is very much about quality, not quantity. Coming back to your questions at the beginning, because we don't just want tightness in the area that is already strong already, we want to work through full range. You can kind of unpick that and get people just to take it step by step and slowly. So I would say, you know, I would expect people to see improvements after 6 weeks. There's lots of things we can look at in terms of positioning, in terms of lifting up. Can we give different cues on the lift? People respond to different cues. I have one lady who loved the cue of as if she's sucking up a piece of spaghetti. Now, it was cooked spaghetti just before anyone is. Whereas for other people, they hear that cue and they're like, that means absolutely nothing
Weird.
To me. So it's about finding a word or some words that matter to you. Or
can we all try at home? You know, we've got 20,000 listeners every single month. Can we all try and imagine cooking up a piece of cooked spaghetti?
Exactly. So it's like, where am I going with that? You know, some people, I like to encourage people to move back to front. So, you know, more from the rectum towards the front of the pelvic floor, because that tends to work better. Squeezing, lifting, drawing in. It's why sometimes sitting is better, because then you feel that you are lifting up and releasing away. That can be really helpful. Whereas as therapists, we love people in lying. We love them in lying with their knees bent, because it's so much easier and it's better for our backs when we're assessing. However, it's not as functional. And I get lots of my women to sit on a little rolled tea towel, and then you feel that you're lifting away and releasing back down to something. And just that thought of I'm drawing up, and I'm releasing back down, because, you know, the release down tends to be the harder part. Why am I going to let go of something that I don't know that I trust at the moment? So I would say 6 weeks to see some changes, but we should be able to make really big improvements. Of course, some of my patients need onward referral. Of course they do. But, you know, with a little bit of diligence and a bit of fun and a bit of thinking, you know, where they can get to and building their confidence around this, we can make lots of change between 6 and 12 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, already imagining myself that I have to sit on a rolled up tea towel in front yes. of you in some doctor's practice. I'm thinking, I'm already cringing, thinking, oh my gosh, like, is it embarrassing? Do people feel a bit like, oh, uptight or embarrassed sometimes? Or do you think by the time they get to you, they're like, whatever, I'm going to give it a go?
I think there's a little bit of whatever, as in, you know, whatever happened. I've had it really done to me. Yeah. But it is why, so actually the rolled tea towel, I usually have people in clothes by the time I'm doing that. They're usually sitting on a little sausage rolled up small, that's just to give them some proprioceptive input. So the thing is, if I have my hands in the air, I can see them. So that's one input. I can't see my pelvic floor. If I touch the wall, I'm giving another proprioceptive input. So the problem when we sit is that my sitting bones are touching the seat. My pelvic floor actually is a little bit raised up from that. So it's not touching anything. So the tea towel or the small little muslin or something is just that you have something to release down to. So I encourage people to do that when they're fully clothed. You know, if you're working from home, probably not in the middle of filming anything or on a Zoom call, but just sit on your little rolled tea towel and just feel that you're lifting and releasing back down. So I try and make it, you know, really, really as non-invasive as possible. We include the breath and sort of certainly lower transverse abdominals and a little bit of pelvic floor movement in some of our classes and some of our exercises. Again, no one else knows you're doing it. I do my pelvic floor exercises at the gym, pretty much guarantee there isn't a male or female in there that has any idea that that's what I'm doing. So I think that's where I love to get people to. So it becomes part of our normal life, just as we might look after, as you said, our hamstrings and our knees and our legs and do all of those exercises. This is part of it. Somebody asked me once, what's the best exercise for our pelvic floor? And really, our best exercise is to have an orgasm.
Is it?
Yes, because everything moves, doesn't it? Whether you're on your own or with somebody, listeners, it doesn't matter. And they all go, oh, can you say that? And I go, you know, I hope so now. I hope so. And I'm conscious that not everybody would ever want to talk about that, and certainly not all of my patients talk about that, but it's that stimulation that gets all of those muscles working, and that certainly gives us a release as well as a lift.
Right. So on that note, let's talk about tools, and I'm not going to ask you to talk about the rabbit or any other clitoris stimulant. That's a lovely conversation for another day. But when you mention pelvic floor exercises, or when I chat about that with my friends, tools often come up, like Kegel exercises often incorporate some little baubles that you insert into the vagina. You mentioned dilators earlier, that's a bit different. Talk to me about some tools, all the way to using lasers even, because that is another conversation that comes more and more into people's conversations. Let's extend it to that way a little bit. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode. 73% of people who listen to my podcast haven't yet clicked the follow button on their podcast player. I want these conversations to reach as many women as possible who might need it. So if you've ever enjoyed this podcast, please hit the follow button now.
Okay, so I think, I suppose personally, we tend to try and be as sort of non-invasive and as conservative with the small c as possible, because that is just accessible to more people, if I'm absolutely honest. There are various biofeedback mechanisms where you actually insert something into the vagina and you can see what is happening when you're lifting and releasing. There are something called the LV is another, and that works on Bluetooth.
These on your phone.
People on your phone, on their absolutely. Phone, don't they?
Yeah.
And there is an amazing NHS app called the Squeezy app, which helps you time your pelvic floor exercises. Now, that doesn't directly give you biofeedback, but that's where sometimes if I have a patient and they perhaps don't want to or can't afford to come very often, then I'll say, fine, we'll come along with the Squeezy app. What we'll do is I will assess you internally and we'll look at what you're holding according to your Squeezy app, and we'll agree whether you are or not. And that gives just that cross-link to work with it. So that doesn't have to be too costly. They do work for some people. Some people love them. Some people say they find them quite uncomfortable. So I suppose I would always try as less invasive and as much that we can do on our own to start with. Then there are things like, as before we even get to lasers, chairs that people can sit on to work with pelvic floor. And again, the ones I've seen tend to be costly, but I definitely have, you know, patients and colleagues who have patients who said they have really, really worked. So I think it's about right time, right place for that. What I actually don't know is I would never suggest anyone uses a chair whilst they're undergoing radiotherapy. There's too many other things going on and I would want it to settle. So I think that would have to be a conversation with you and your consultant just to check. I mean, it's not delivering anything else. I can't see it being a problem, but I just think we need to err on the side of caution, don't we? We don't want to make anybody worse with anything at all, because it can be, I've tried a couple of the chairs and you do, your first reaction initially when it does that movement for you is like, okay. So I want that to be in a good place for everybody. But, and I think it's great that we are finding more and more treatments. So we're getting, again, so laser quite often will perhaps check, you know, they'll try and look at the tissue quality and try and improve. So there's so much we can do with that. But I think for most of our cancer patients, I would say get your treatment out of the way, try a more conservative approach, and then absolutely look at moving forward. But let's get everything to settle, because some schools of thought are now saying that some of the, you know, side effects from radiotherapy can be 3 to 6 months. So I think, yeah, I don't want to encourage people to rush something, which I understand as well can be horrible if you're really keen to get something fixed.
I think it's a bit like with the whole menopause conversation. Initially, we're so ill-prepared. Most people say to us, Dania had no idea that the menopause would become such a big deal in my recovery from cancer, whatever cancer that is. And so people are really ill-prepared for it. Then it's often not very much acknowledged, so we don't talk about it. Women feel it's just them. They feel they should be doing better on treatments like tamoxifen, aromatase inhibitors, or after gynecological surgery, whatever it is, that we feel, oh, it's something to do with us. Everyone else seems to be moving forward and I'm still here with all of my symptoms. And then it's the lack of support. So women often not knowing where to turn to, and listening to you, especially with gynecological cancer patients, you'd think everyone who's going through, say, radiotherapy, surgery, really should be, needs to be referred to a women's health physio. Yeah. And it's, what an abrupt sort of ending to a patient's journey. That doesn't make any sense. That to me is not healthcare. That is treatment of an acute situation and it's life-saving. And of course we need to do it, but that's not healthcare. Healthcare is helping the person to recover as well, isn't it? And it's a big piece missing in many countries all over the world.
But you are absolutely right. I mean, you are so right for that. And that's why, you know, when at Genesis Care, we offer a 12-week exercise program. What is amazing about that is that nearly all of our patients will have, of course, finished their treatment. It's not true of some of the chemotherapy ones, and we try and be as flexible as we can. But if we think specifically radiotherapy, and then they carry on seeing us. So they carry on coming in, meeting other people at different stages in their journey. Now we're post-COVID, they're actually allowed to talk to each other and be a little bit closer to each other. They can sit and have a cup of coffee or tea afterwards. And we are there to talk to them and listen to them if they've got changes. So I think sometimes, you know, there'll be somebody on walking on the treadmill and I go, and how are you? So, well, you know, this has happened. Do you think this could be related? And I said, well, I don't know. Let's now, when you're finished, let's talk about this. So I think that element of your active treatment has finished, but that's just the start of your journey. And you're so right. We're not helping these amazing women get back to the rest of their lives, which would be a bit different. But there is still so much quality of life to have. But we have to help these people. And you can't just go, oh, here, have one of these, have a blue pen and it'll all be fine. It's so much more complex than that, except sometimes the treatment can be simple, but we have to really listen to them and allow them to feel heard. There's no silly question. And I think your comments about, you know, tamoxifen and some of the other medication is fascinating. They feel they can't speak up. And we're like, you can say whatever you want in here. We'll find you somebody who had something similar or who did something different. And it's just lovely to be able to provide that opportunity for them to be other people to talk to. Yeah.
Yeah. And we hosted so many online workshops in the autumn last year and towards the winter. And it was fantastic. We had guest speakers just as excellent as you talking on different topics. And whoever's listening to this who came and joined us, you'll remember how lovely it was. And then at the end, it's almost like everyone is clinging to their screens and no one wants to go home. You know, the expert would have left and there might be 50 of us in the room and we see each other on Zoom and there is so much more to say. And there is this common understanding of shared experience and it's humbling and it's amazing at the same time. And no one wants to be in our club and no one wants to sort of be part of that community really. But once you're in it, you just understand how truly amazing all of these people are, and it's a real privilege to be here. And there are communities and friendships that we form that we wouldn't have ever made if it hadn't been for our shared experience. And so much so that I always thought, what is everyone thinking now? What do people want to say more so? So we've now hosted, or we're hosting, a series of get-togethers, and we're just going to meet online without an expert, where I can just facilitate that talk. And whoever turns up, if three people turn up or 30, it'll be great. Just because, like you say, sometimes it's more than just fixing our pelvic floor or trying to find a treatment. It's about that shared experience. For me, there is so much learning to do with my pelvic floor and my pelvic health, so much so that I still feel I get so much wrong. I recently went to a smear test to my local GP, and she is a menopause specialist, this particular GP. She's really great. And the first thing I got wrong is I started to undress before she pulled the curtain. So then she said, oh, why don't you just wait until I pull the curtain? So I felt a bit silly thinking, oh, I should have known, like, this isn't the first time I turned up for my smear. And then I got undressed and she waited on the other end or other side of the curtain. And then I sat down and she walked in. She said, oh, that other sheet of paper that was meant to go on top of you. And I sat on it. I sat on both sheets of paper. And again, I thought, oh gosh, Danny, it's just all a bit like cringeworthy and embarrassing. And it's so good to talk about it, even though if we have reservations and we feel uncomfortable. And I hope that everyone at home listening to this conversation is just going to check in with their own pelvic floor for the next 48 hours and think, how is it for me down there? How am I breathing? How am I holding? And do I have issues that perhaps I just started to take on as normal? Because often we think, well, that's just how it is. It's not great. It's not perfect. I'm a bit leaky. I'm a bit this, but it's the best I can do. And really question that, because there might be some help out there and you can really improve on that. Do you often see people that think, oh, that's it now, that's sort of the best I can do, and people sort of think they have to put up with it?
All of the time. I think if women have had little ones, they, depending on when they had them, they may or may not have done pelvic floor exercises, and quite often they're given a piece of paper and I'm so sorry, but that's just not good enough, because you only need one appointment with somebody to know how to do it properly. And I mean this within the, you know, the postnatal arena, because people go away and they think they've been doing them and they perhaps haven't, and a tiny tweak can make a difference. The next thing is, of course, that we tend to stop, everybody does. If everything's working or you feel okay or you're busy, you stop doing things. And then we have these hormonal changes and our muscle tone changes and things. So it's like, well, I think I don't know, there's nothing I can do now. But at that point, there still is. That's why it's so fabulous. So, you know, theoretically speaking, we can get our muscles in our body back to almost where they were in our 20s. It's a lot of hard work. So I'm not saying we completely replicate that in our pelvic floor, because there's a lot of other things going on. But if we haven't really used it and even brought our attention to it and our intention to it, yeah, we haven't even been thinking about it. So I'll say, you know, it doesn't matter whether you didn't do them, you did them 20, 25, 35, 45 years ago. Now is the time. Now is the time to see what you can do. So we can always make a difference. And I think often just from thinking of us as a whole, just helping women to, even if there's a small improvement, it's that reconnection back with, we are more than the sum of our parts, and just reconnecting back with ourselves.
Yeah, that is absolutely lovely. Thank you, Sarah. For anyone who wants to do their pelvic floor exercise, the Squeezy app is a really great tip. That's an NHS approved free app, isn't it? And I'm going to link to that in the show notes, and also to ask our GPs to maybe see a women's health physiotherapist. Now we know what to expect. If anyone can't be bothered, maybe they think my next orgasm is just going to be as good enough, Sarah said. It was really lovely for you to have this conversation with me today. I can clearly see your passion. You're not far from me. You're in Twickenham.
I know.
I'm in Kempsditton in Surrey. And so, yeah, maybe one day we'll get to meet. That would be wonderful.
No, thank you so much for asking me. I just think it's so important to let women know that there are things they can try. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's all that we want for them, really.
Yeah. And for all of you amazing people out there listening all over the world, because our little community is growing every week, I just really hope this conversation has been helpful, informative. It's given you a little bit of food for thought. and that I'll see you all or hear you all next week. Thank you.